Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
Good morning and welcome to another episode of Talk Straight. This is yours truly, Reverend Dockery, your host. We have about 30 minutes today and we're going to pick up where we left off on last Thursday. Following our theme, we're still talking about the related topic of the electoral process. And today, the topic is the advocate versus the politician. Who best represents your interests? That's what we're going to talk about today. And we're glad to have with you again. You can call us here at 657-383-0944. I see we have a caller already from 662, and we will engage them in just a moment. And we also have our regular panelists, our esteemed panelists, Pastor Ricky Waller, the author of Steel High. We'll engage him as well in our conversation. But so let me get to our monologue briefly here so we can get our callers in and get their input here in the show. Again, we're talking about from the topic on this May 9th, advocate versus the politician. Who best represents your interests? Matthew 23:11 reads simply, "But he that is greatest among you shall be your servant." Now let me define some terms here related to our conversation. Electorate: people who are eligible to vote in an election. An electoral district or constituency: the geographic area of a particular election. Represent: be entitled or appointed to act or speak for someone, especially in an official capacity. Advocate: person who publicly supports or recommends a particular cause or policy. And lastly, politician: a person who is professionally, in other words, they're being paid, involved in politics, especially as a holder of or a candidate for an elected office, a person who acts in a manipulative and devious way, typically to gain advancement within an organization. I read those to you because not to insult the intelligence of our listening audience, but to emphasize the point of the difference between an advocate and a politician who seeks to represent the electorate. want to talk about voter turnout. Robust voter turnout is fundamental to a healthy democracy, as low turnout is usually attributed to political disengagement. We've talked about that. And the belief that voting for one candidate or party or another will do little to alter public policy. Keep in mind that established democracies tend to have higher turnout than other countries. Interestingly enough, however, voter turnout in the United States is much lower than most established countries. That may shock some people. To help explain this, let me cover 5 points here. One is the election type. So in a general election, what we have found is that low turnout is most pronounced in primary elections, okay, where the Republican or Democrat party is trying to choose someone who will represent them in a general. They're also low in all-year elections for state legislators and local elections for your mayor, for your council people, or for representing ward, automatic ward. In 144 U.S. cities from 1996 to 2012, found that voter turnout in those cities averaged at 25.8%. In many cities, however, mayors have been elected with single-digit turnout. What that says is people are just not interested in those elections. Demographics. When you look at this in the aggregate, voters tend to be older, wealthier, more educated, and whiter than non-voters. Young people are much less likely to vote than older ones. From 1972 to 2012, citizens who were 18 to 29 years old turned out at a rate of 15 to 20% lower than those who were 30 years or older. This says something about who is interested in the process. And interestingly enough, this 18 to 29 is the age of your rioters, of your Black Lives Matter, and those people are most frustrated, we see, even on college campuses. But they're the ones who turn out to vote the least. Let's look at it from a perspective of race and ethnicity. Voter turnout also varies by race and ethnicity. In 2012, turnout rates among eligible white and black voters was 64.1% and 66.2% respectively, while it was only 48% and 47.3% among Latino and Asians when you compare them. The 2012 election was the first presidential election since Reconstruction ended in which black turnout exceeded white turnout. At issue was trying to reelect the first black president, Barack Obama. That was what got folk out. Women's voters turnout has surpassed men's in every presidential election since 1980. And in the 2012 election, 7.8% more women than men voted. But interestingly, the older women are actually less likely to vote than the older men. In 2008, 72.2% of men 75 years or older voted, compared to only 64.9% of women at that same age. And lastly, socioeconomic status. And this is key right here because it really speaks to those that are most disengaged but who tend to get the least resources from the government that they pay taxes to. Wealthy Americans vote at a much higher rate than those of lower socioeconomic status. During the 2008 presidential election, only 41% of eligible voters that made less than $15,000 a year voted, compared to 78% of those making $150,000 a year or more. Studies have shown that this difference in turnout affects public policy. Those who cry the most about things being wrong are least heard when it comes to making public policy. Politicians are more likely to respond to the desires and the wealth of their wealthy constituents than their poor constituents, in part because of the fact that the wealthy constituents are most likely to vote. Some of the questions that we post on our question thread on Facebook. One, given the frustration on so many people who have lost faith and confidence in government officials, who can best represent their interests? Two, how does a member of the electorate choose a candidate in an election? And lastly, three, to what extent does the electorate control the actions and decisions of an elected official? You can find these on our Facebook account, and we will post a response to those. But we welcome your response. How you doing, Dr. Walker?
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, Matthew.
How you doing?
Good.
And we got a caller on the air. Let me go to 662.
The last numbers are 2381. How you doing, caller?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to our talk straight. Pastor Wall and caller, tell me where I went wrong in my monologue.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I didn't find anything wrong. From a lot that I got out of it, you know, you were talking about advocate versus petition. Who would you best desire to represent you? And to me, not knowing much about politicians and things of the nature, you know, that you take the scripture according to Matthew 23, and I understand that in verse 11, you know, it's talking about the greatest among you must be a servant. And who
right.
I best to serve me would be the one in whom I've learned something about. And I only have learned about Christ and God changing my life and things like that. I never had knowledge of the president changing nothing about me, you know, with my knowledge. And yeah, I would say I would love to give credit where credit is due, you know, with all due respect. I'd had no relationship with the president. I didn't know him. Matter of fact, you know, back when I was caught up and captured, I didn't even know who the president was. It didn't matter to me. And I learned something about how good God is. He changed my life. So that's why I would have, you know, I would have to get that. Yeah, I would love to give God his credit.
Let me hear this caller here from 662. Caller, how you doing?
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm doing
caller,
well.
Okay,
yes,
great,
I'm here.
Great. Would you like to chime in on our discussion here this morning?
Yes. I was listening to your response as far as the low number of voters. And that is a big problem. So as I was listening, these are some thoughts that came to my mind. Are people interested in change, particularly the people who don't vote? And I have concluded that, yes, people want change. People are interested in change.
Mm-hmm.
However,
mm-hmm.
they lack the confidence in the process, and that is the electoral process. And why do they lack confidence? Well, in minority communities, particularly African-American communities, we as a people, we lack confidence in the process because we're broke. We have poor living conditions. We have higher unemployment rate, suffer from health conditions. We're uneducated. Then we have issues of police brutality and racism. So these factors create barriers to us going out and actually feeling like we can make a change. in
Let me push back on you now. You raise great issues, and I think your points are well taken, particularly with the police brutality and poverty and things of that nature. What is it that those individuals who are most affected adversely by those things you listed, what can they do as a registered voter? What do you think, or is there anything you think they can do to change those conditions?
Yes, there is something that can be done. I would like to challenge people who are crying, saying that these are real issues for me, and how can voting change them? And I would like to challenge that notion by saying that's why voting has been downplayed, because it is a powerful tool. It's a thing of a, like, reverse psychology, because I have a cake and I want to eat this cake. I'm going to tell you that this cake is terrible. It's not good for you. You don't want this. And so I'm going to revert your mind into thinking that this is not a good cake. This is not for you. But I'm eating it the whole time. So communities that we're speaking of can realize that, hey, you're being played. Every time you don't respond to, you're given an opportunity to change your community and your way of life, and you don't respond to it, then you're being bamboozled.
Right. So now, one of the things that we wanted to draw a distinction between is what an advocate is versus somebody who is a politician, which are largely associated with individuals who make a living, basically, off of getting numbers. Now, what the politician and the advocate have in common is that both of them are in need of a certain amount of votes to win the election. But the advocate helps the people they're representing, who they're wishing to vote for, to lay out a policy agenda that will resolve their problems, particularly as those you mentioned. Whereas the politician really don't care about your problem being solved. They, like you say, I like your analogy, they want to keep the cake to themselves. That's the nature of the politician, as opposed to the advocate in the political process. Pastor Waller, would you agree with that, disagree with that?
I fully agree with that. I really do. You made a great point. I mean, the politician only care about themselves, as you just said, because they're on the payroll, but an advocate would be one that intercede on your behalf and make make the right standard style of living, you know, in areas of your life. You know, for instance, if you have crime in your community and you have someone that's going to step up and make a stand so they can make a difference, you know, and then that right there to me is something that's deserving and is in need, as I would say today.
Okay.
It's going on. Right. And if you don't mind, I'll share this right here. And I want you to know, because you brought the scripture up, and in the 13th chapter of Matthew, the 23rd chapter of Matthew, if you will, verse 12 says, "But those who exalt themselves will be humbled."
Mm.
And those who humble themselves will be exalted. So, in other words, if a advocate is humble, then he would be exalted, and so the community would be restored, I think, you know, more so than the president have a position. But do we care about Nashville enough to make sure that these drugs be removed from our city? Are they getting that done? Do we care? I mean, who's going to make a stand? So it's things like that, man. And it's other areas, not only that. But I just thought I'd just let you know I'd better have an advocate, someone that's going to make a stand, man, that's going to prove themselves instead of just talking.
Right, right. Carla, your area, I believe 662 is Columbus. Is that the Columbus, Mississippi area?
Yes.
Okay. Do you find these things, because we're calling 615 in Nashville, but of course the other cities that we've engaged people in. Do you find this to be the same issue there in terms of, because what you described, we have that right here in Nashville. I think Pastor Waller would bear witness to that. Is that a consistent around the nation? Because one of the things I pointed out in the monologue is how in America there's a lower voter turnout than other established countries. And interestingly enough, urban America is where the lowest voter turnout is. You think that's a consistent thing, caller, with all of America, urban America particularly?
Definitely. And I would like to say that to sum it up, it would be divide and conquer. If we can get the disenfranchised communities, if we can scatter them across opinions, then where there's unity, there's numbers. But where there's disunity, we cannot stand, and our voices are not as strong. It reminds me of a cartoon I saw, and the Horton Hears a Who, and there were these little people that lived on a spit, and people, the other animals, they didn't know that the animals on the spit existed, and they say they're too small to exist. They're too insignificant. Who could live on a spit? A clover.
Wow.
It was a small little clover, a flower.
Okay.
And there was one elephant who believed in this. And so the elephant had to convince the little people that you do have a voice. And if you come together and if you're loud enough, you can tell these other animals who are getting ready to destroy them that you have a voice and you are here. And in the cartoon, all the little people, they got together and they started to shout, "We are here, we are here."
Watch out now.
And so the noise infiltrated the atmosphere, and these small little beings that lived on the spot were able to be heard, and they were able to save their lives. And I feel like that's parallel to what's going on today. If enough of us come together, our voices will be big enough to be heard even by the largest establishment.
Interesting. You know, Pastor and caller, if you're hungry, it doesn't matter what your pigmentation is, you're hungry, right? If you're homeless, it doesn't matter what your pigmentation is, you're homeless. If you are deprived and without basic resources, it matters not what your pigmentation is. You're deprived without those basic resources. And I can't emphasize enough the importance of knowing that while justifiably people are mad at politicians for running games on them and making money off of them, I understand that. But I would say to you that next time you really consider, who is it that will come to you and be a servant as an advocate for you, and not necessarily somebody who will tell you what they think you want to hear to get your vote so they can make their money while in office. That's the difference. And to your point, Pastor, there is a spiritual element to this, you know, and certainly even church people are part of that number that don't vote, because they believe that is of the world, is wicked. And there is a lot of wickedness and cruel and manipulative behavior going on in politics. But that's among politicians. We need to be wiser to identify individuals that will represent your best interest and advocate on your behalf in public office, so to ensure that those poor people get the resources. Poor folk that are going to church every day, every Sunday, are without those basic resources, elderly people, young people, children in schools, the whole nine yards. It is incumbent upon us, though, to be educated, to be involved and organized, as the caller was saying, in the process of saying, we are here, and you're going
to make a lot, made a lot of sense what she said. You know, she said that you make
Absolutely.
Your look, your voice, put your voice out
Absolutely.
There and make it be known. And you're not just making noise. It's a certain type of noise. You know how,
right.
like the word of God, they make a joyful noise. I mean, you know,
mm-hmm.
that sound like there's volume in that, man. I mean, and joy don't come,
right.
you know, I'm just saying, hey, I'm joyful. No, you have to put it out there and make it in. I mean, and that's what she's saying. And when you do that, it will make a difference. And that I say
right.
in communities, man, you know, it's time for that. Because the destruction, the divide and conquer, man, I mean, it's steadfast right now, man. I mean, it's actually working. It's not like
mm-hmm.
it's not working. It's actually working. But it's time for a turnaround because there's still hope. And,
right.
You know, and
right.
I just
right.
God for the call and for all that
yeah.
you shared right there and make a lot of
Absolutely.
Sense.
Absolutely. We're coming down to our last 4 minutes. Carla, is there anything else you want to say before we start to wrap up our episode here?
I would just like to reemphasize the point that the lack of confidence that is it's an unspoken norm in powerless communities. And
mm.
I would like to challenge the ideology by saying it's a trick. Don't give in to the culture of powerless. Because let the
right.
weak say what? I'm strong. So I would just I would
I really
like,
gotta preach right there. Yes, indeed. I believe that might preach right there. But
Amazing.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I just got happy, that's all. I just got happy, that's all. well stated. Well stated. And you know, there's hope. You all know that I have run in political races before, and the truth of the matter is I realize that people are despondent, and they want, as you said, Carla, at the beginning, they want some change. And I don't
mm-hmm.
mean no chump change either.
Yeah.
But they want change. They went in
That's
the
right.
store, put a $10 bill on the counter for $1.50 item. They got some money coming back.
Yeah.
At least $8.50, right?
Yeah, that's
of
course.
Now, suppose the clerk tell you you can't have your change. We got a problem up in here. Is that right?
It's like you're trying to eat something. They're trying to take something. That's what it sounds like.
I want my change. So
yeah,
for these last 2 minutes, let me encourage you to go to our website, www.dfcinstitute.com. Learn of what we're doing in terms of our lecture series and support our calls. We'd be grateful to have your support financially. It's a 501c3 nonprofit deduction. We're registered in the state of Tennessee, and we're grateful again for you listening, and we hope you give us your support. We'll be back Thursday in another subject related to this topic matter. And probably the rest of May, we'll be talking about political issues here and how to help the disenfranchised to become empowered. So, again, we thank you. We're going to leave again on the OJs. They say it. You got to give the people
mm-hmm.
what they want. Ain't nothing wrong with that, is
it?
All right.